Let's turn to the subject we particularly wanted to discuss with you, a series of stories about NMSU. Walt, why don't you take the lead?
Yeah, well, sure. Your primary story was...
I think we have a phone.
Do we have a phone call? All right, let's take the phone call before we get into another topic.
First.
Caller, go ahead.
Morning. Hi, this is Diana Alba-Solar. I'm with the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative, and I'm just joining in to be part of the discussion with Elizabeth.
Oh, good.
And the sexual assault stories.
Yeah, I will ask the same question, and we'll let you jump in, Diana. But Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about the main case that you reported on, and kind of the wider ramifications that that has. But why don't we start with that case?
Yeah. So basically, it started with, I believe, a 2022 sexual assault case. The defendant. The jury ruled him not guilty, and the victim sued the university for not protecting her because the suspect was still allowed to go to class and stay in the dorms even while the incident was under investigation. And so she did not feel very protected by the university. She did not feel like they did enough to protect her. And in response, she made an agreement with the university, and there was a $1 million settlement where the university agreed they would start mandating consent training. And so that's really where all of this began.
And did the assault happen in her dorm room or in the dorm itself?
It happened in an on-campus dorm. I don't remember if it was hers.
Gotcha.
It
was a dorm where there should have been some kind of security or some kind of reasonable expectation. Yeah, okay. And I guess the fact that the jury found him not guilty, should we read anything into that, in terms of how?
I'm not sure. I do think that says a lot about our legal system.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let me jump in as a lawyer.
Yeah.
As most people may be vaguely aware, it's a whole different deal. You're being asked as a criminal, in a criminal case, you're being asked to decide beyond a reasonable doubt that this happened.
And 12 people have to agree.
12 people have to agree.
Right.
If one person thinks, I'm tired of the Me Too movement and, women are too powerful now, the hell with them.
It's an incredibly high standard, and
you've got
deservedly
a hung jury.
So.
Yeah. And you have to do it again.
Yeah.
If you've got a couple of people voting against. So basically, in the criminal case, forget about it.
Okay.
As a civil lawyer, what I would say to a jury in closing, and the plaintiff side always says this, is you need to decide by a preponderance of the evidence. Now, what that means is if you have like 6 pounds of evidence over here on the scale, and on the other balance, you've got 6 pounds of evidence, and a feather falls on one of those. I mean, every lawyer says that.
Sure.
Every civil case lawyer.
Right.
If a feather falls on that, you find for my client. So that's a hell of a difference.
So 50-50 we win, basically.
I'm sorry, I interrupted, but wanted to make
I think that, so that's, and what did NMSU, what kind of changes did NMSU agree to as part of this legal settlement?
The legal settlement, I think the only change that we've seen so far has been the implementation of the consent training. Originally, the deadline was October 24th. The deadline has been extended to the end of this academic year. I think a lot of students were disappointed and frustrated with the university that was the only action that we've seen.
Diana, I'll let you join the conversation. What do you want to add? What have we been missing?
Well, I wanted to just applaud Elizabeth Ann and her team for taking on this difficult topic, because it is one of those important topics that can often fly under the radar with such small newsrooms, and particularly it's great to see, you know, young journalists doing this kind of work. I'm with the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative, which is a project of the New Mexico Local News Fund. We're trying to bring together local newsrooms to do some of the more in-depth and sort of enterprise stories that often don't get covered in today's era of very small, tiny newsrooms. And so, I wasn't really part of the original reporting that Elizabeth Ann did in conjunction with Jessica Onsoris of the Las Cruces Sun News. They did a partnership there, but we're sort of supporting the collaboration in whatever way we can. And it's just been neat to see everyone working together to further the discussion of this important topic and also the reporting.
So can you just talk a little bit about, as a student, do you feel safe on campus? Let's just start with that.
It is, I think, me personally, I feel safe, but that's because I haven't been in any situations personally. I'm not usually out that late.
Yeah.
I don't walk alone at night on campus, honestly. And it is scary. But I still, like, during the day I feel safe. But that goes for anywhere. I don't think most women feel safe walking alone at night anyway.
I think that's fair. So what is the security situation at the dorms? Do you have to show ID to get in? Do they have, you know, an officer, you know, not police officer, but a security officer there on site all the time? What is that situation like?
So I actually was a resident assistant last year in Juniper Hall, and I lived in Juniper Hall as a freshman, and that is the same dorm where the assault allegedly happened in 2022. So I can speak specifically about that dorm, and it does require ID to be shown to a scanner at the door to enter. However, the door will stay open for quite a while after someone walks in. They don't automatically close. They'll stay open for a bit and then close. So it is pretty easy to, you know, have people sneaking in and out. Another thing is, it is possible that someone could, you know, enter that's a resident, but not of that specific room, just like maybe they live on a different floor. And there have been some problems with people leaving their doors unlocked in their dorms. I think people feel more comfortable to leave their dorms unlocked than they would a house. That's something that I found really interesting when I was a resident assistant. People just leave their doors unlocked, which I personally wouldn't do, but I understand, you know, it's easy, but please lock your doors.
Yeah, I was going to say, you get a sense of comfort. I get right. that, but still.
I ask this both of Elizabeth and Diana, but I noticed in the stories that the woman who's the head of the Office of Institutional Equity or something like that.
It is institutional equity.
You got it right.
Yes.
Ms. Gutierrez was saying that she thinks the education system generally has failed college students in terms of getting them ready to deal with being sexually active. Do you agree?
If
you say yes, I'm going to ask how have they failed.
I can't personally speak for the public education system. I was homeschooled. But I think the presence of sexual assault cases on campus, there's been 46 since 2018 reported. I think that is evidence that the education system has failed us and people aren't learning about this before they enter college.
Any thought of what the university could do differently?
I think we need more advocacy, and more Like, if someone is being investigated for a crime such as this, I personally don't think they should be allowed to continue living in the dorms, especially the freshman dorms. So I think there should be more intervention from the dean of students in regards to that. I think hopefully a suspect could be moved to another housing if they're in freshman housing, or if, you know, they could be moved to somewhere where they're not living with other people in the same building. I think also it probably wouldn't be too hard for the dean of students to arrange for a suspect and a victim to not be in the same class. I don't think that should be happening.
Yeah, that seems obvious that right. Once you file that complaint, that those things should happen. What support systems are available on campus for people who have been victimized?
We do have the Office of Institutional Equity, which is where people go to report instances of sexual assault. There's report.nmsu.edu where people can file a report. Anyone can call the Office of Institutional Equity. I don't know their phone number off the top of my head, but it's on their website. I think we also have OHP, which is the Office of Health Promotion, which is a little bit different. They do more like trainings, and they talk to students about topics such as consent and sexual health. We also have many different events that happen within the diversity programs, and support can be found in those communities as well.
The most famous incident, or infamous probably would be better, was the basketball team incident. And beyond that, the other ones that made the papers a lot were the hazing incidents from the fraternities. Has the attention of those forced the administration maybe to take a different look at this? Because that made national news, the basketball team one.
I think it probably impacted their decision to make the mandatory consent training, but they didn't make that until this year, and the basketball stuff, that happened a while ago, I believe. So I don't think...
Two seasons ago.
Yeah, they have not been acting very quickly, and so... I am glad that the consent training has happened, but it could have happened sooner.
Yeah.
And I think the university could have reacted more strongly to the lawsuits regarding the basketball team and the hazing, more than just giving people trainings, because I feel like that is just like the minimum. You know, there's a lot more that they could be doing than just giving people a training so they know how to report things or what to expect or like what sexual assault is. I think students know what it is and they know how to recognize it. I think what we want from the university is for the university to be stepping in and advocating and protecting us instead of just telling us about things.
Diana, anything you'd like to add?
Well, yeah, I would like to draw attention to the Roundup had published an opinion column that went hand-in-hand with their stories, and sort of rehashing what Elizabeth Ann just pointed out is that one of the gists of that was that even though, you know, training and making students more aware of, you know, propriety around consent and, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault is important, it feels like more of a starting place, I guess, to really, it seems like looking at the broader scale of approaches across universities that it's actually a multi-pronged approach to influence culture on a campus among students. And so there are other attempts and programs that probably need to be part of shifting a culture and making the campus safer for all students from a like a sexual assault prevention perspective. And so I'm working with a freelancer, Leah Romero, and she's looking into a story. It's not ready yet, but she's taking a look at that angle, sort of like what could the university, what is the university doing now? What could it do better? And some of it maybe doesn't even lie exclusively with like university administration, but there can be like student peer groups that help promote consent and awareness and sexual assault prevention. And so that's a piece of it too, I think. But it seems to be that a broad multi-pronged approach is the best approach to making a difference for students.
And can you let people know real quickly where they can find that reporting that you're doing on that?
Yes, it should be available at our website, southannamnews.org, or we're also going to be sending it out to our partner newsrooms, which includes like the Sun News, and if the Roundup is interested, they're more than welcome to publish it as well. The Bulletin and KRWG are some of the local partners.
Send it to us too. We may.
Okay, I would love to
talk about it. I want to come back in a moment to what you do, Diana, and your organization, but we had a caller who basically posed two questions. One is, are there escorts available at NMSU so that if a woman's leaving a party or a meeting or whatever it might be and going home to the dorm, she can say, hey, I got to walk back here, and they have an escort for her.
Yes, ASMSU does have golf carts. I think it's Pete's Pickup. That's what it's called, Pete's Pickup. And it runs throughout the academic year. Students can contact them and get a ride. There have been problems in the past, though, because it is student run, it doesn't always function year round, just because of scheduling or people not being able to go.
And that, you said ASNMSU, people might not have caught that, but that associated students run it, not the administration of New Mexico State, as perhaps they should. I don't know. And the other question is, and you may not know about this, but you can ask the administration and tell us next time you come back, but is NMSU talking to other campuses about, yo, this is a common problem, how could we be handling it better?
I haven't heard anything about them doing that. I think that would be great if they did, but so far, I don't know.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, do we want to switch? I think we're both eager to kind of switch a little bit and talk about journalism, if that's okay.
Yes, of course.
First of all, let me tell you how encouraged I am anytime I meet a young person who is in this profession, because it's very difficult, and I know you certainly understand what you're getting into. But it's so incredibly important, and so I just let me start with, you know, what you see as the challenges, and why did you think, you know, when I was coming out, there were jobs everywhere. There were newspapers in every little town, and small radio stations in every little town, and they all had news directors, and they all had big staffs. And now it's just a very different environment. And so how do you see your future and the future of this important institution in the country as we kind of move forward in this new era?
Yeah, it certainly is a challenging time for journalists, not only because of the job market, but also because of the attacks on the press coming from this presidential administration. I have two friends who went to the Trump rally in Albuquerque last year, and they were booed. The media section was booed during the rally, and
it's part of his shtick.
that's just an example of what we're dealing with right now. But there's also just so many hard things going on, so it is a bit emotionally draining to write about those things and talk to people who are being affected by those things. So that is another challenge for sure that we're facing. And in regards to the job market, it is frustrating when, you know, no one's hiring, no one has the money to pay you. But it's not going away, I don't think.
It can't. I mean, it can't. It, 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 The demand will certainly never go away. The need will never go away. And it has to be filled. And how we monetize that, I don't think we've figured out yet.
Well, of course, one of the tremendous differences that we see between the past and now is the proliferation of other, you know, everybody's a journalist. Everybody's either taken a cell phone picture or video of a police misbehaving or a stadium booing a president or whatever it may be and putting it on the internet. And there are so many people doing all sorts of podcasts. So when you look at journalism, what is journalism these days? Does that include all those, or is it narrower?
I think the definition of journalism is broadening, especially with, you know, anyone can post anything on social media. There's not a lot of guardrails about that. But I do think that the, like, official, quote-unquote, news organizations are still so important for us to have reliable sources. I think it is very helpful for those news organizations to be able to rely on the people on the street recording things, because we can't be everywhere all at once. So we do have more resources with people posting things on the internet. For example, I think it was in September, there was a human trafficking raid or a federal immigration raid in Chaparral. And I heard about it on social media. And I reached out to the people that posted about that on their stories or on their reels. And so I reached out to the people that posted it, and I got more information from all different sides of the story. And so that's just an example of how journalists can, instead of fighting against the social media posters, can use them as resources.
Another quick question. What's the relationship between the Roundup and the administration these days?
Well, good question.
That is a good question. We remain very independent. That is one of the things I'm most proud of with the Roundup, is that we are very independent. We're a student organization. We're not part of the journalism department. And so we're completely independent from the administration. And our relationship has been that we'll contact them when we need a statement. Sometimes they'll answer us. sometimes they'll take a while. It's pretty cordial overall.
Oh, good.
Diana, I wanted to let you get in here on this discussion, because you guys are sort of at the center of trying to address what we're talking about here. So what are your thoughts?
Well, all the issues that you just raised are certainly ongoing discussions. I don't think that anything has necessarily been resolved. There are certainly a lot of anybody with a cell phone, as Elizabeth Ann mentioned, can basically be a publisher now. And so in some ways it's good, because it is almost a democratization of being able to post your own content. But in some ways, there's also some downfalls that come with that, in that misinformation can spread much more quickly than in the past. And also, I think there is a debate going on sometimes among journalists, but also I think in some ways among the public, about just how they want to see news presented, how they view credibility of news organizations. And unfortunately, that's also, as has been mentioned, part of the national political debate as well that's going on. So I think that there's a lot of challenges,
Diana,
on many fronts.
Can you tell folks what your organization is and what you do? Because you're kind of in the background of a lot of stories people read, but they may not realize it. So very briefly, because we're coming to the end of the hour, can you introduce folks to that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, the New Mexico Local News Fund is basically a nonprofit that's seeking grants from philanthropic organizations that then we use to implement different programs that are trying to support local news across New Mexico, as well as encourage startups and news products that are serving different populations that may have never been served very well at all by local news. And so one of the projects that the News Fund supported was forming the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative, which is basically just an agreement among local news organizations to cooperate, you know, in various forms and fashions. Sometimes that's, you know, sharing contact information, sometimes with about sources, or collaborating on stories like this one with the Sun News and the Roundup. But overall, we're looking to support and help fill gaps that exist in local news. And one of those, as I mentioned earlier, is just that a lot of newsrooms are just very small nowadays, you know, one or two journalists, whereas they used to be there used to be a lot more journalists working. And what that sort of practically means is that many times it's hard to cover more in-depth or complicated topics because there just isn't time when people are trying to cover everything from the city council to the local car crash to the the cold front that's on the way and everything in between. And so we're just trying to find ways to support local news and in southern New Mexico, as well as journalists and newsrooms.
Any last brief comment you want to make on the stuff we've been talking about, Elizabeth?
Following up with what Diane said, one way that the Southern News the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative is helping the Roundup is there, and the Sun News is we're all working together to host an event coming up November 20th from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m., which will be a discussion about the sexual assault awareness on campus. And
where will that be?
It will be happening on the third floor of Zuhl Library. Next to Frencher Food Court.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Elizabeth Ann. I'm suddenly blanking on your last name.
Andrews.
Andrews.
Thank you.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. And Diana Alba Solar, whom, of course, Walt and I know well from working with in different ways when she was with the Roundup. Sun News.
Yeah, Diana and I worked together for years at the Sun News.
Yes, and I knew her grandfather as a county commissioner. But great to talk to you both. Hope to have you back soon.